right. Good morning, class. Welcome to Art Eater podcast number, I don't know, but this session that we're going to be talking about the latest Hayao Miyazaki movie, The Boy and the Heron. Also, I think the original title was How Do You Live? So I'm here. I'm on Richmond. I'm your host. I'm here with Mike and James. We just got out of the movie. We literally just watched the movie, and we're going to do an impromptu podcast right now. And we're just going to dive right into it. I guess quick introduction. You guys?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, this is James, resident fighting game expert at Art Eater, but also because I work at BitEgg, I get those two mixed up. So, you know, but I also do game design work for BitEgg, and I'm really happy and excited to talk about this. I know I haven't been on a lot of episodes recently, but I've been super busy, so I'm just glad to be here.
Yeah, right on. This is Mike. I've been on this podcast before, I think, fighting game one.
Right? Yeah, fighting game levels. Yeah.
Right. Good friend of Rich, good friend of James now, working out here in Chiang Mai at BitEgg in a creative direction role and contributing however I can.
All right. Let's get right into it. So obviously there's going to be spoilers. We're going to talk about the movie with our whole hearts.
Yeah.
What a movie.
Yeah. All 10 toes, full chest.
Yeah. So just for context, like, I think none of us knew anything about the movie.
No, nothing. I have never seen a trailer. I think at the most I saw was, like, maybe a picture of, like, a boy's face or something. And that was it.
So
I
knew perfect. Nothing.
Yeah. I would literally scroll past, like, autoplay algorithm stuff on Twitter that would try to show it to me. And then, like,
skip it.
There was a random, pop-up shop here that was selling some kind of shirt with one of the characters on it. And I, like, literally ran away from the pop-up shop just so I wouldn't see what was on the shirt, like, in full. So
I know what you mean. I try to avoid everything even before I knew. Apparently that was the ad campaign in Japan. They just had a poster that was no trailer.
Maybe that's all I saw was
no
poster.
Ad. Yeah, just one poster, barely showed anything.
No idea what this movie was going to be about.
Which is my preferred way of going into these, because I'm like, you know, been a Ghibli and Miyazaki fan for decades now. I know I'm gonna watch it. It's just a special treat every couple of years. So went in fresh.
Absolutely.
And wow.
what an experience. I mean, you know, the original Japanese title is How They Live, and it's like, you almost ask yourself, how do you live, like, after watching it?
Yeah.
It's so, it is very much like a different Miyazaki film than, or at least for me, the experience I have watching it. I mean, the basic premise of the plot seems fairly simple, but the navigation of where it goes is just, I don't think I've ever had that experience, you know, but I don't know. I mean, that's just me. I mean,
I feel the same way. I had no idea where it was headed. When you watch something like say Spirited Away, you kind of have a feeling, it was full of delight, but not necessarily like shocking surprises in terms of what would follow, right?
Yeah.
You get into this sort of supernatural world, supernatural things happen. This one starts off one way and then delves into this other world. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it took me, I didn't know what we were doing. I was like, oh my God, what is happening?
Yeah.
Especially with that bird. When they introduced the hair on it, like, I was like, wait, is there a mouth inside of a mouth? I was like, what's happening here?
It was like, one of the other things I'll say about Miyazaki is that he knows how to visually depict things in the most beautiful way possible, regardless of how disgusting painful something looks. So it's very easy to digest in that regard, but it's very, like, it's beautiful. It's such a spectacle to look at. I mean, the movie's beautiful. Like, and, you know, everybody says that about Miyazaki films, but I feel like he, like, pushed the envelope, so to speak, again.
Yeah.
In a way where you're like, wait, I know he knows how to animate people running with intense man. He knows how to do things. But the shit that you see in here is, it's insane.
Like, the thing that kept getting me was the most mundane animation. I was super locked in.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, why does that look so good? When the kid just is walking towards the camera, walking from the side, every little small innocuous thing that they were doing, I was like mesmerized.
There's nothing but acting. Just pure acting. You know, like I said, I don't want to jump ahead, but like the main character, it's like, he says so much by not saying words, like in the first act of the film, and you're just like, oh my God, like, I want to hug that kid, you know? But I guess before we really dig deep, I mean, I don't know, Rich, you want to kind of give like a basic premise to start with.
You heard that.
All right.
I think so. This is what, like the seventh time that Miyazaki's made a movie after saying he was going to retire?
Yeah.
Right.
This is the seventh Jay-Z return.
Yeah. Right.
And he hits it out of the park every time.
Every time.
Every single time. And, but out of all of them, out of all of those, this one really feels like, a final statement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm pretty sure he'll still make another one. But I think he's freed himself from the weight of making a final statement. Like that an artist's final statement.
If I were to coin a phrase for it,
body work.
Yeah.
It's like, if I were to coin a phrase for it, it definitely feels like, shut up, it's a grown man talking.
Mm.
Like, you know, like, I'm going to say what I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really care if you understand it or not. I'm going to say what I want to say. And that kind of, I guess, brute force of, you know, telling the story that you want to tell in the most beautiful way possible, it is refreshing and surprising.
Yeah.
Rich, I sense that you saw a lot of allegory in this movie.
Mm. Yes. Can I just dive into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yes.
Okay. So, I felt like this was so full of allegory. I mean, like, so much anime is very literary, especially Ghibli movies. Yeah, they're full of like a lot of symbolism. They're very personal. But I feel like this is the one where like Miyazaki like lays everything bare. And I mean, did you notice like there's so many callbacks to like his past movies, right? Mm. Didn't it almost feel like a greatest hits?
Yeah.
But rather than just sort of like superficially repeating himself, which a lot of people do later in their career, like, hey, remember this?
Yeah.
Remember when I used to be good?
Yeah, stuff.
Yeah. Right? But this one, it was like he was revisiting these shots.
Yeah.
And it was like he's telling you, like, well, this is what I meant then. And then with, you know, the passage of time, this is what I think I really meant. Because there were so many shots, like you know, the opening of the movie is very Totoro-like.
Yes, it is. Yes.
But it's kind of like flipped, right? Because instead of about, like, you know, little girls, right? He's always made stories about girls.
Yeah.
Now it's like, it's a guy. Every time he has a guy hero, that's an author insert.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right? Like, and, you know, Totoro was about sort of, when he was young, his mother was sick.
Right.
Right? So that was, like, very autobiographical.
Yeah.
He had a lot of anxiety about like, his mother being away at the hospital. And in this one, like, this one, he flips it. He makes it more dramatic. She fucking dies in the hospital.
Yeah.
So it's almost like he's taking his life and turning it up to, like, 11.
Yeah.
But in a weird way, maybe he's being kind of more honest. Like, he's sort of, like, taking away the pretenses, and he's being like, okay, like, this is what I really...
This is what it felt like.
Yeah. This is what it felt like.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, his mom didn't die.
Right.
He was so afraid.
Yeah. But he's like, it's like he's delving deeper into the trauma.
Yeah.
No holds barred.
Yeah.
I'm going to just face this thing.
Yeah.
Kind of how Scorsese has this whole issue with Italians and the mob and gangsters. Yeah. And he's done it over and over and over and over again. He's obviously trying to get something out.
Like,
some feelings. This, exactly focusing the same exact way.
But he repeats shots, right? Like in Totoro, when the kids go to the house, like the youngest one, May, she breaks away and she finds like a little path through the bushes. And it's wonderful. Like the imagery is very like womb-like. It's almost, you know, it's very, if you want to get into the psychological aspects of it, it's like going back to the womb and everything's nice.
Yep.
And gentle. But in this movie, it's like the same thing. He's gone through that same path, but it's unsure.
Yeah, it's scary.
It's scary.
Yeah.
It's frightening.
Yeah,
it's terrifying.
It's deeper into the psyche. It's going deeper into the subconscious.
Yeah, yeah. It's like he's, before it was very curated.
Mm-hmm.
It's still beautiful.
Yes.
No detriment. But here it's like, it just felt so much more raw.
I agree.
Yeah. It felt like if there were dramatic pauses from the previous interview where he decided not to say something,
mm-hmm.
this is what he would have said.
Mm-hmm.
If he would have put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, because he was so literal. Because the first scene, you know, he's Mahito in his bed you know, and you hear the sirens, you know, you're like, okay, something's going down, but you don't know that it's connected specifically to him yet. You just know that it's something that affects him. And the moment that you realize it, and, you know, that, like, you know, your mother's hospital is on fire, you know, you're like, oh, shit. And then just, you see how it affects everyone else around Mahito, but then you really, you get to focus on him and his hand for, like, a very brief moment, and then it yanks you out of it. It's like, no, she's dead.
The animation there.
Oh my god.
He's running and it gets more and more nightmarish the further he runs.
It starts hearing. It's almost like he's being burned by his own anxiety as he's trying to get to the fire.
So. I gotta say, when that happened, I was like, this is not a normal Miyazaki.
No.
It's not a typical. They've never looked like that.
No. That's not, I was like, he drew that. They drew that.
They drew it.
Yeah, because I was like, that's no CG. Is it not doing an effect? Because I was thinking, am I tripping or is this thing distorting like crazy?
No, it must have been the animator as Shinya Ohira. That's like his. His signature thing is just like warping everything. He started off as like a super good VFX animator.
Okay.
And then he became a really good character animator. And to him, there's no difference between VFX and character. It's just physicality, right? Yeah. Everything is just physicality to him and representing some internal emotion.
Yeah.
That sequence, the animation's wild. Like even like all over the place. The background characters.
Yeah.
They start steering to
everything is equal when that guy animates. The background,
his
characters, the effects. He did in Howl's Moving Castle, do you remember the magic scenes? Remember when Howl finally confronts his old teacher and suddenly the background melts away and they're in the air and Sophie's there with him and they're flying through the atmosphere and they're like, he turns into a monster. You see his toes like break through his shoes and it's just wild. That was Shinya Ohira.
Okay.
I'd stake my life to he animated that opening too.
Yeah.
It was very different looking. It was not as buttoned up as Ghibli stuff normally is.
I felt like a weird sense of an unease
throughout
most of the film. Yeah. Where I was just like, this is, it felt dark. Like,
it kind of felt like a horror movie.
Yes.
Not even a horror movie. It felt like a horror book. Like a story. Like,
like
when you read, like, you ever read like old Victorian novels?
Yeah.
And like, it's not like nothing graphic happens, but it's so like, emotionally distressing.
Like, yes.
Like, something terrible is going to happen.
One of the things that I noticed, right, was, like, you know, Mahito, before his father shows up in any scenes, you can tell that he instilled a lot of good in him.
Yes.
Like, there's something very dignified about him. He's a young boy, but he acts like an adult.
Basically. Yeah, he's a little man. Yeah.
And he processes things. Like, you know, when his mother died, it was like, okay, this is what I got to do.
Right.
Okay, boom, 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 my dad is moving, we're moving. Okay.
Right.
And there's a scene where, like, he finally becomes, like, the little boy again. He's sitting on the bed.
That's right.
And it just, you see, like, the adult sink out of his face. And he just, like, hits the bed. And then the bed, like, just really kind of just, it's almost, like, takes the adulthood and holds it for him. Yeah. Like, it's kind of you know. But one of the other things that I noticed, though, was that, like, you were talking about the whole thing, was that there's simple, mundane scenes that have this sense of, like horror, like, raw emotion or feeling. Because you can tell it. I mean, I'm just keep it a buck. But Mahito, when his father married, when he got with another woman, he was not with shits. He wasn't. He dealt with it.
Sure.
But he was just like, I don't really fuck with her like that in the beginning.
Right.
And he was, you know, respectful, cordial.
Right.
But when she reached for his face, like, he kind of...
He's like,
He's like, really like, oh, no. It's like, you look like my mom, but you're not my mom.
Right.
And I don't... like this.
Yeah.
You can see it, you can feel it, and he's not saying anything.
He never complains.
Never. Very mature kid.
Very mature child. Like, there's a lot that's said without actual words. It's because the animation and just it's so much acting in it. I know I've said this like probably the second or third time I've said it, but you have to see this to believe, like, just how it's not just good animation. It's purposeful.
And yeah.
You feel these characters. Like, they yeah. all feel like real. Like, when his father shows up, it's a man.
That is a man.
It is a man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed
that. That is an adult.
Like,
it was funny because we see the kid. I was like, it's a good looking kid. That's what I thought yeah. to myself. And then someone one of the grannies says it. Well, it's a handsome boy. I'm like,
yeah.
I was like, well, enough. The entire time I'm analyzing, I'm like, why is he handsome? Like, it's the way they just proportioned his features and lined him up and everything. And then you see his dad. He goes, it's a good-looking guy. And
yeah.
He takes after his dad.
Yeah.
They both share other traits, too. Like,
yeah.
They're both pretty brave. They
yeah.
both, if there's a problem, goes, right, we're
yeah.
going to go
kick ass.
Take
care of it.
Yeah.
Well, there's one scene that happens. So, okay, I don't know. Maybe we should just give, like, I
yeah.
guess, like, a basic
yeah.
idea of what's going on.
Yeah.
So, at the beginning, you know, Mahito wakes up to his mother's hospital burning. She dies. They're in the midst of war. They move out of Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting a new life.
We didn't even mention, they're in the middle of fucking World War
II. Yes,
yeah.
World War II.
World War II.
Because it starts off, it sounds like an air raid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, I guess it's a fire alarm, or is it the same thing?
Same thing.
Some sort of alarm.
Yeah. So, basically, he's starting a new life. His mom's gone. He's in a new place, new world. He's dealing with the death of his mother. He hasn't really properly dealt with, bereavement at all. He's accepting this new life, this new mother figure, but he's also in a new school. He's a child.
Mm.
Now, granted, when they show the school, everyone else is acting like children.
Right.
But he's the adult. You know,
yeah.
you notice when he's, like, putting his books down, it's almost like he's sitting down to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas the other kid, you can see, like, he's reacting to his face, his body.
Yeah,
he
the other kids are way more antsy. And they're all like, who the fuck is this
yeah.
kid?
And
yeah.
it's like, whenever he shows up, they stop what they're doing, they're looking at
yeah.
him, you know. And it was funny, I remember the father mentioned, he's like, oh, I'm going to drive you to school in a Datsun.
Yeah.
And you're going to be really impressed. But they didn't show that part, but you still felt this idea that, like, they did not like this kid.
Yeah.
And he's walking along this, I love how this scene is done, because they don't waste a lot of time on it.
Yeah.
They give you just enough, because there's an important element of what Mahito does before, I'll get to that, but
mm-hmm.
he's walking, and these kids, they see him, and they accost him, like bullies do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the shoving started happening, and, you know, they started fighting, and Mahito was like, I'm just gonna take all of them on, dude. Like, I don't,
yeah.
you know. And he thought to himself, he's like, okay, I look tattered, I'm beat up. I can't go home and tell my parents, like, yeah, I just got beat up at school.
Right.
I gotta come up with something. And he does the most Hokuto no Ken shit I've seen a child do. He grabs this stone.
Yeah.
And he bashes it, like, and
really
you think,
hard.
And you think, like, okay, he's gonna bash just a little bit of a gash. No.
Mm.
There's blood pouring out of the side of his head.
Yeah.
It's horrifying.
And it's really horrifying, because you really see how painful it is, because it just gushes out of his face. And you gotta think, this is Miyazaki's like aesthetic, so
yeah.
you would think they would be disgusting and brutal. But it's kind of beautiful in a weird way, the way that it flows
yeah.
out. Because you're like, oh, he has to do this. Because you see the look on his face, he's like, okay, I have my story, now I'm gonna
yeah.
go home.
Yeah.
But his father is a real one. And he knew, like, no, this isn't what happens.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the school.
He knew something was up. Yeah.
He knew something was up. But I'm telling this only because it tells, like, this whole story of, like, all of this stuff that he's dealing with. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, okay, this is the stuff that happens in the real world that he's dealing with.
Yeah.
But, like, the story gets more intense because of where he's living. So they're in this new home, you know, his new mother figure. He's got these mysterious, like, obasans.
There's, like, seven grannies.
They're, like, adorably creepy.
Yeah.
Like, and they all, you
weird.
Know.
It's really weird.
Yeah.
They communicate all these things about how, like, they imply that this place is a little weird,
yeah.
but we're here.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. And eventually there's a point where Mahito is.
Okay. Well, I had one note about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah,
we got a sec.
Yeah, the rock on the head bash.
Yeah.
The way I read that, especially now
yeah,
that
yeah.
we're talking about it, is that this kid has not properly processed his pain.
Mm.
This is forcing him.
Ah, yeah.
He's
yeah.
really hitting himself over the head.
Yeah.
It forces him to heal. It forces
yeah.
him to take the time
ah,
down.
That's
not,
deep.
Like
yeah.
not be an adult, right? He has,
yeah.
to, he has to sit there and be cared for.
Yeah.
Because he hadn't had time for that.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
his caretaker, his mother,
is gone.
So
yeah.
he's surrounded by
yeah.
his ancestors.
Mm.
Like those little stone statues that you
yeah,
see, or
right,
those things
right.
called, like, you don't kill till you see them. Like, in the Kuma stage, it's got the ancestors of
the Jizo statues.
I think that's how I read all of them. I
yeah.
thought they were all his ancestors.
They're little totems.
Exactly. So, go on. Yeah, I just, That's how I read the head bash.
Okay.
Forcing yourself to process.
Let me just get a little more context. How much do you guys know about how Hayao Miyazaki grew up? Like his actual family?
Tiny bit.
This movie is like super autobiographical, and it's the most it's the only time he's ever recognized his father in his movies, because he's always talking about his mother. He's always talking about his mother, his grandmother. This is the first time he's really shown his dad, because his dad, during World War II, owned a factory that produced wings for the Zero bomb. So this is like he actually put his dad in this movie.
God.
He's never done that before.
Wow.
So he's had like, complex feelings about his mother, but imagine what he felt about his dad. Right. So I think this movie is also very much about fatherhood. And on top of that, I remember this story from Miyazaki was talking about. If you read he's got two books of essays that. Well, they're not his books. People collected his essays that he's written over the years into two books. One is called Starting Points.
Okay.
And one is called, what is it called? Starting Point. you can Google it.
Yeah.
But anyways, if you buy these and read them, read the essays. One of them he talks about his dad. And so he barely like remembers the post-war era, but his dad was like a weird guy. He was weirdly modern. He came from a wealthy family. They owned a factory. They were producing Zero wing bombers, the Zero bomber wings. And he recalls a story that he heard about his father, where towards the end of the war, Japan's losing.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, I mean, the government's like super gung ho. They're like, everyone, like, die for your country. You know. And they're like crazy. And by the way, like no one even like there was no democracy in Japan at the time. It's not like the people had a choice. Democratically elected. They were like, okay, well, I guess we have to do this.
Right.
So in one of these essays, he recalls a story he heard about his own father, where the war was about to end. And they were like kind of like trying to rouse everyone up to like fight to the end. They're telling everyone, like, look, you have two choices. You can go home to your family, or you can stay here and fight like a man. Right? What are you gonna do? And his dad raised his hand. He's like, I got a family to see here. See ya. So his father, rather than doing the typical honorable thing, he's like, fuck this, I'm gonna go take care of my wife and kid.
Right.
So he was raised by like a very weirdly modern person.
Interesting.
And I feel like you could see that.
Yeah. Tons of that stuff. You get as a factory. Yeah. They make planes. Was that cockpits or something?
It was like the top.
They were making the tops.
The tops.
That was his way of recognizing, like, his family.
Yeah.
Owned a factory. They made airplanes. They made war weapons.
And I guess his dad. I mean, would you consider him fairly modern in the movie? Because he drove kind of a more.
Oh, yeah. He got a car.
Yeah, a nice car. By the way, remember he skids in when he parks the car? Did you not get Castle Gabriel's
drive? Yeah.
Yeah. He did that. That's like, another shout out.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to one of his.
So many shout outs.
Yeah.
And I think his dad's kind of like, come on, man. I mean, we'll get to this. Let's dive right back.
Yeah,
that scene when like he's crawling out of bed. It's late at night.
Yes.
You know, it's like 9 o'clock, which back in the 30s was super late.
Super late. Yeah.
And then he's trying to get out, but then his dad comes home.
Yeah.
And there's that shot of his new mother greeting his dad.
Yep.
You see them embrace.
You just see their feet.
You just see their feet, but you know.
You know what's going on.
Yeah. Kissing or something.
Yeah.
But he tries to get a look.
Yeah. And then he backs off.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, no.
That's sort of the most, like, you know, that's like the most sexual that, like, any Miyazaki's ever. His movies are very. It's not as if they don't acknowledge that sex exists, but he doesn't. He barely shows like kissing.
And that's kind of. It's like they don't need to show it. You know what's happening.
You know what's happening.
No, and the kid, you feel it in like a little kid way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He's curious about like what's. But then he's like, okay, I should.
Yeah, but that's a man and that's a woman,
right? That's what they do.
Yeah.
Where did you leave off the
point? Okay. So he just bashes his head.
So he bashes his head
because he needs a break.
Yeah. And know, he goes back home and, you know, he has his story, and his father absolutely refutes it. Like, immediately, he's like,
he knows what's going on.
I'm going to go to school. I'm going to figure out what's going on. And, you know, the little creepy, adorable Obasans are all taken care of.
They're like, so great.
And he's sort of resisting, but he's also kind of like basking a little bit.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, you know what? This is fine. Yeah. You know, this gives me a break too, right?
Yeah.
But then this fucking bird appears. And like in the poster, it's a very dignified bird. You're just like, oh wow, that's really beautiful imagery.
Yeah.
But immediately you get this idea that this bird is just a fuck. Like, you're just like,
yeah,
what is going
you're
on?
Fucking
this
off.
Bird is off.
Way off.
It's banging on the windows. It's, you know, just kind of like flying around. And because when he initially comes into the new home and he's walking with Natsuko, it like whooshes past him. And Natsuko's like, oh, the bird's never really done that before. It's never come and, you
into
know,
the house.
Into the house. Yeah. And she was like, oh, it must be trying to greet you. And it was like, man, if we knew like what it was really trying to do at that point, it kind of like targeted Mahito in a way. But it just pesters her. And when it's not pestering him, it's just doing weird shit. Like, you know, like when it enters like this little window of the house, it does it in the most peculiar way possible. And I could describe it, but I don't want to spoil that part, even though we're talking spoilers. If you happen to see this movie, I want you to just see how weirdly this bird operates. Because it just does it does weird shit. Like, did you think when it
yeah,
went inside
when
of the window?
Crawls into the window.
It was the creepiest, like,
super
weirdest,
weird.
Just,
yeah.
Like,
because birds are goofy. Like, sometimes you don't even know it's a window and they bang against it.
Yeah.
This bird is, like, moving way different than a normal bird.
And this bird has, like, I've been on cops, like, energy. Like, it's really just, like, I've been out here before. I know what you want me to do. Like, it's very odd, right?
Yeah.
And it kind of has this like thing where you're like, you're focused on it, but you don't know why, right? And then, like, eventually the bird starts, like, antagonizing Mahito, and, like...
And up until this point, it's a real bird.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's just some weird...
Yeah, it's just a weird bird. Right?
But you did that one shot where you saw it had teeth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what the fuck is going on here? Are we okay this way?
It's like, it looks like it has, like, Evangelion angel dental plan. Like,
yeah.
It's just like, what is this? Like, why does it have teeth? And eventually, like, I mean, you guys can correct me if I'm jumping too far, but eventually, it's kind of established that this bird is going to, like, confront him, or he's going to confront this bird. And he goes, like, Mahito goes into his closet, and he pulls out a bouquet, and he's just like, we want to handle this now.
Yeah,
it's almost like he's thinking to himself. He's like, "What will my dad do?" And he's like, "My dad would fuck him up." So he's just like, "All right, I'm gonna go get the bouquet. I'm gonna handle it. I don't know how it's gonna turn out." But I'm
he doesn't ask
it.
Anyone for.
He doesn't ask anyone for help. He doesn't say anything. And he stands outside like he's waiting, like in after school at 3 o'clock for this bird. And it's the way that the shot's progressing. Him like getting the bouquet and going outside. Standing on the edge of this, like, you know, pond.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, but you see, like, the strength of this little boy. You're like, yo, alright, whatever you're gonna do, I'm with it. But then they show the shot of this fucking bird coming at him. And you're thinking, okay, like, they're gonna cut away at a certain point. And it's like, no, they want you to feel just as terrified as you would. So this thing comes from very far in the shot. And it almost, like, it's like it hit, almost like low-key, like, hits the camera, like, And in that moment, that's when it's at that close to Mahito. So, like, you see the exchange with the broken.
Yeah,
and
it swings.
Like, interacts with its beak and, like, snaps off, like, the majority of the broken. And then, like, flies away. And you're like, okay, what's going to happen now? But then you look at fucking Mahito, and he's still on his Izai Yoikyo from fucking Demon City. He's like, no, I'm going to still fight this. He's got like a butter knife.
By the way, a bouken is a wooden practice sword.
So he's like at the ready.
He's unfazed.
He's unfazed.
He's just like, I'm still in
the
fight.
I'm still in the fight. But then the bird just starts chomping on the bouken. Eats the bouken.
Oh.
Like, what are you supposed to do? And at this point, this is when it becomes, I guess, like, you know, Ghibli Midsummer. Like,
yeah, because... Gosh, so true.
Because it starts communicating with Mahito, like, just saying, like, weird shit that it sounds like he might have said in a dream. And, you know, Mahito's kind of, like, in a trance from what's being said to him. But then, was it the macros that came up and started, like, supporting the statement that the bar was saying?
The koi.
Yeah. And it was like, rejoin us. Because this whole thing, they're trying to, like, summon him for something.
How do you say that in Japanese?
He was saying
oide.
Which is like really to come.
So
which is, by the way, in Spirited Away, remember the creepy three heads?
So you've got these like repetitive chants, but as it's happening, these like tadpoles, these toads come out, like New York rats, and they start like piling like all over and you're thinking like, him. Yeah, and then you're like, he's unfazed. I'm like, oh shit, he really is a trance. So like, you know, they're all over him. And keep in mind, this is all beautifully storyboarded. The shot progression is incredible.
One of the most gorgeous sequences in the movie.
It's amazing. Yeah. And then Natsuko and the Obachan clan like come out. They're all running. Like, oh, we gotta try to see. They have like brooms. Like, you know, they're gonna do something. But Natsuko has this bow, and she like shoots like, I guess, at the bird. And is that where the hole came from for the beak?
No,
that's from something else. Yeah. So,
but it lands right in front of it.
Almost hit him.
And, like, the bird is shook. But when, the moment that happens, like, Mahito comes out of like, what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, the toads, like, leave his body. Like, all the animals, like, kind of just, like, you know, they backtrack. They, like, jump away. And it's just, like, at this point, you know, okay, This is going in a specific direction that is not, you know, and it's sort of just like, okay, like where are we going from here? Okay.
Can I tell you what I think the metaphor was up until that point? So my reading of it up until then was the movie starts with this little boy like processing some pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah.
And it is like so much. And he's got no one to confide in, nothing to express himself through, and he's just dealing with it. And like you said, you know, the moment where he's in his bed, his new mom leaves him, when he just can relax, he's so exhausted, he immediately falls asleep. So he's a little kid going through heavy shit. And then you have this heron that sees this troubled kid. And didn't he feel right away like that heron's trying to steal him away? So
yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because it tries to lure him into that house.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And at first, it's still like a normal bird. I mean, it's creepy. It's kind of like a little more deliberate than an animal should be.
Yeah.
Interactions. But it's still a bird. But then when it starts talking and imitating like his dreams of his mother saying, like, come save me, that was like terrifying.
Yeah.
So my reading of that, I think this movie is about Miyazaki as a kid, troubled kid, his mother might die, very lonely. This is a very common experience for children. I think the heron represents two things. I think it represents death and fiction. I think it represents the release of both.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it represents the possibility of death just ending it all. Because he does bash his own head to get some relief.
Yeah.
But it also represents the seduction of fiction where you just escape into another world.
Mm-hmm.
That heron is trying to lead him into another world.
Yeah.
And I think that's the central metaphor of the movie. It's Miyazaki sort of like going super deep into how his relationship with fiction, how it's something to escape into, but if you're not careful, it will swallow you whole. And I think you don't want to live totally in fiction,
right?
Yeah.
Totally unhinged from reality. And I think the whole movie is about what he was trying to do in all of his movies, where he was creating a fictionalized account of his own life, which is, that's hard, man.
Yeah.
You hard. Take your own life and you create something new, and there's some truth in that fiction. Yeah. And I think that it's all about that balance of like, okay, I'm trying to express myself and I'm making sort of this really curated version of my life. But if I'm not careful, I could lose myself in this, which is like, that's very seductive.
Yeah.
And I mean, especially, I think all over the world, but especially in Japan, you have people just lose themselves in there. Like with the whole otaku movement, the hikikomori. I know for a fact, Miyazaki himself feels pretty responsible for this. Like his movies are so lovely that people can actually lose themselves in it. There was an interview where he said that he wants his movies to be something special that you watch maybe like once a year or something. Right, he doesn't want people to become obsessed with him. He's like, watch it on your birthday or something. But, I mean, I've had periods in my life where I'm like, I need an escape.
Yeah, sure.
I put on like, Totoro or something like that. It's like, people use this as a balm for their own pains.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this movie is about that fine line between, self harm and self, just taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
In fiction, through fiction.
Yeah. They don't let you escape.
No.
They don't let you escape.
No.
No matter how much you want to, it never stops being unnerving.
Yeah.
There's always something a little off or creepy, and like the color.
Yeah.
It's beautifully painted. All the backgrounds and all the environments and shots are so gorgeous. It's just something like.
So each time they introduce a new creature or thing or element,
like those weird parakeets.
Yes.
Okay, so are we jumping too far?
We're too far, I guess. Okay. James Scott.
James, please.
With the synopsis.
Rundown. Oh, there's so much. I'm just trying to make sure that I don't
get in the right order. Too.
Yeah, because I'm so all over the place. But, goodness. Like, there's a...
Off the cuff.
Is a key moment though, where it's sort of, after this happens, obviously Mahito's at a point where he's like, okay, this harem is talking to me. It's communicating with me. It wants me to go somewhere. It wants me to, and he's trying to figure this out, but then also like, I think this is the point where he stumbles upon like a mysterious area, like the tower, right?
Yep.
So, he kind of feels compelled to go toward it. I think because he saw the heron go toward it.
Mm.
And when he reaches it, and this is just me, right? Like, one of the things I thought was really interesting about Mahito is like his determination, right? So he walks up to this, he wades through like a pond to get to this tower. And, it's got this like.
Did he walk through the pond?
Yeah, yeah. He waded through. Like,
okay.
Yeah. So he gets to it, and immediately you see that like it's obstructed. Like there's stairs, but it's like there's like stuff in front of it, like log or something. And most people would like look at that and just like, okay, well, shit, I can't get through here. But for like a full 20 seconds, you watch Mahito struggle to try to like squeeze through this. Like,
that crack in the stone.
And it's like you see him putting all his might.
And it's so grimy.
Yeah.
Gross. That's slimy.
Cobwebs.
Yeah. And he doesn't care what's on him.
But he's following that trail of feathers.
Yeah.
He
sees the feathers go up the stairs.
He sees the feathers, and it's like, he gets even more intrigued when he notices that the feathers are in there.
Yeah.
He's just like, oh, I've got to do it.
So at first, it's kind of ambiguous. You don't know how long the feathers have been there. But then he sees one fresh one just wafting down. And then he just really tries
to. He's really trying to push. Yeah. And the only thing that breaks that intensity is one of the Obasans just being like, come on, Sonny, come on back here.
Yep. Come back to reality.
But what was weird about it was like even the way that you were saying it kind of felt, just sort of like alluding to, hey man, this place is not right.
Yeah.
Don't go into stuff, like leave this stuff alone. And you can even tell, he's kind of resisting it a little bit at first. He's like, all right, they see me, let me go back.
Aren't there a couple moments leading up to that or surrounding that?
Yeah, there is.
Where you're like, they're calling him.
They're calling him up.
And he's just like, he ignores them.
And he just walks. He totally ignores them. He's like, no, I got to do what I have to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I mean, this is the thing where we're talking about the character acting with Manto, where it's just like, he really believes in whatever his father instilled in him.
Yeah.
He's just like, I find him to do something to it. But, he gets pulled back, and then he goes back to rest. But eventually he goes back to the tower.
Yeah.
Right?
I got a quick tangent.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the walks in this were like really realistic?
Yes.
And I don't mean like rotoscoped.
No.
They felt like
real
people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anytime somebody walked up steps, anytime like they're walking, it felt real.
That's what I'm talking about. I kept being fascinated by the mundane stuff. I was like,
yeah,
is this a walk? Walks.
Yeah.
I get it. Before I saw this movie, my brother Andy, Hokuto Andy, he told me, he was like, hey, go back to those books of essays, read some of those before you watch this movie, because it'll help you understand the movie. So I did that last time, and there's an essay that Miyazaki wrote a long time ago, probably like 20, 30 years ago. He talked about walk cycles. And he talked about, when we do animation, we do walk cycles, and it's that's the essence of animation. That's like the thing you got to master. You got to do that to learn how to do anything else. But I remember thinking, it was a very weird essay, because he talked about how, he was watching some old, I don't even remember the name of the movie, some old fun Hollywood movie. And he said he likes watching this old Hollywood musical because, the walks are so good. It's just the way people walk, the way people are expressing those. It's so, full. And he was like, we can't quite do that in animation. He felt kind of jealous. He was like, I wish I could do that. We do cycles. We break it down into math. Right? It's not quite reality. But with this movie, I feel like you fucking cracked it. Walks felt like...
I think the one...
It wasn't that, math. Is it wasn't...
One? Yeah, but the one that stuck out to me the most is when Natsuko was going up the steps to go, I think she was going to let Maito know, I think she was leading him up to call him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just the combination of the sound design of actually stepping on the steps and the timing of the animation, it was wait, is anime real?
It didn't feel curated.
No.
No.
It just felt real.
Very organic.
It was very interesting. I don't know how they did that.
Yeah, it was very strange. I kept looking. I was like, man, she's really stubborn. And she's really, and you don't see her feet in that shot. That's the other thing that's crazy.
The thing, she's a big robot.
Yeah.
How do you make me feel that?
Yeah.
And I kept noticing how many, they kept giving us tons of shots where people were walking. It was like, and I never got tired of them. And I kept thinking to myself, God damn, they can animate. I was in my mind, I was like, this is really good.
Yeah.
And I couldn't wrap my head around what they were doing. Because they're animated on threes.
Oh, I mean, it just depends on the shot.
How about the walks in general? Do you think? Because there's a couple where he walks towards the camera, too.
Probably on twos.
Twos.
Yeah. And then, some of the eerily smooth ones are on ones. Because
Disney, they do everything on ones. The hand-drawn stuff. And it looks good. It looks really, really good. But for some reason, I felt these felt more real.
Yeah.
Even though they weren't shot on ones.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't think
it's something.
I don't know what they did.
Like. There's some other stuff that happens when characters sort of sway or they're moving into a position.
Yeah.
And they humanly settle into the roles. And it's I don't think I've seen this before. They feel more real than I've ever felt in any music.
And there was barely any music.
Right? Yeah.
They want you to just concentrate on
the visuals. There's no escape.
There's multiple shots in the film where you'll feel a character settle into what the Gengeki poses.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, wow, I've never spent this much time before. And it doesn't feel like you're like, oh, this is just them spending money.
No,
it
wasn't really showing off.
Yeah, it feels human.
It's trying to show you something.
Yeah.
Think about that, though. The fact that there's not that much music. means that the acting and the staging was so well done that yeah. we didn't need help from the music to make me feel a certain way.
Yeah.
I was already there.
Yeah.
And they knew you would be there.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is crazy confidence.
That's insane. Yeah. yeah.
That's wild. Right?
God. It's like if I didn't want to spoil it, like I was talking about, you know, it's a very human movie.
Very, very.
From good. The visuals to what yeah. it's expressing to, like, everything about this film is very human.
Yeah.
And I, like, they're all quintessential Miyazaki designs. The way they're animated, everything that they want you to feel about a character's personality is there, right? Like, Mahito is a strong, growing boy.
Yeah.
Shouldering, like,
brave,
horrible, like, tragedies and all this stuff, right? You know, his father, someone who's already done it. He's continuously showing his son how it's done. And you feel that in his design. And it's not like Miyazaki did a different style or anything.
No,
it's to the intense time. It feels like he perfected this, right? You know, and it's like, because if you look at, like, okay, you look at the way he draws, like, women, right?
Yep.
They're all beautiful.
Yeah.
But, like, Nazuko, she's just gorgeous character.
Mm-hmm.
And you just...
He doesn't normally do that.
It's like
he doesn't normally make like
yeah.
a woman that attractive.
Yeah,
right.
You know,
that's a good point.
It's like if you're talking about like mundane stuff, right? Like sleeping is. I don't think I've watched any of it where sleeping is animated so well. I don't think I have ever seen something that made me go, "Damn, I want to sleep." Like it just looks so beautiful, right?
I want to expand on that.
Okay.
I think that's kind of like the point of the movie, right? The fact that you could say that, the fact that you could feel that, because this movie is about how your unconsciousness drives fucking everything. Everything.
Yeah.
Your unconsciousness, that's what you really want.
Yeah.
And then life is sort of the struggle to balance that with like, wait, hold on. We got to do something else right now. We got to stay alive.
Right. But there's moments in this movie where you're just like, wow, like, that feels more human than watching an actual person.
Yeah, it was nuts.
because the logic in Hollywood would be, oh, let's remake this, or we'll make this, but this is live action. This is just about normal stuff. We have some CG in there, put the bird, make it CG. And it's like, no, it wouldn't be the same.
No.
It wouldn't be the same. The fact that human hands touch this and they recreate reality through line, and it's like, yeah, it's you're. He perfected it.
Yeah.
He got it.
He perfected it.
Though. He got it.
It's like everybody, you know, remembers him talking mad shit to an animator that was working on Mon Mokka He-Man about Ashitaka running, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, nah, bro, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it even more now because you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's really expressing human expression in his work.
And this isn't even the craziest thing he's ever done.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Don't think so.
In terms of, like, visuals, I think it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't say Spirited Away is way more... bombastic and
sure.
Yeah. There's way more going on, way more wild, crazy shit. This has plenty of crazy shit, but it's I think that whole theme that you mentioned, that about not falling too far into the unconscious. He has one foot in both. It's like he has a foot in both worlds, and we never get too much of one over the other.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? Like it feels that way.
That's why it's so unsettling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because the scene where the heron. Where he tries to fucking kill the heron, and the heron reveals himself.
Yeah.
That's actually one of the most frightening scenes I've seen in a movie in a long time. And it's so effective because it's so mundane.
Yeah.
Yes.
The heron hasn't fully revealed itself yet. And the carp talking to him, or carp that I've seen before, the frogs calling him on him, or frogs I've seen at the market.
Yeah.
But to recontextualize it like that is so eerie.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the heron revealing himself.
Yeah.
Right. He's like a little man, right?
Yeah. Instead
of a suit. And he's super ugly.
He's hideous.
He's got big ass. He's like a little goblin, basically, right?
And you could, you know, if you look at that scene and you're kind of just like, nah, that's a real dude in there. And it's like when there's a moment where he's helping the heron, because there's a hole pierced through its beak.
Yeah.
And it's like in my head, I'm like, oh, it's a prop. It's just some dude trying to tell him something. But when you realize when he's trying to help him, like, he's sensitive to the feeling of the beak. Yeah. You're like, oh, this just got creepier.
Yeah.
Like, that's him. That's not a costume. That's not.
Yeah, it's him.
That's actually his body.
His body. Yeah. It's not a costume.
Oh, you can feel the hole. Yeah, because remember, he fills in with a little pork or something.
Yeah.
And he starts talking shit. He goes, hey, man, just remember, we ain't friends. I'm not your buddy.
Yes, yeah.
He starts talking shit. And then it pops out. He's like, oh, okay.
He's like, oh, I need, wait, hold on. I think it's coming out.
Help. And he's back to song.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
We got to backtrack. Okay. How much of a man Mahito is.
Yeah. Right.
Because, okay, he's a boy. And we know he's shouldering a lot of shit. But he does the most grown man shit throughout this movie. But he's trying to figure out, like, how to... Because I'm backtracking just a little bit to prove a point. After his first encounter with Aaron, he remembers Natsuko fought it with a ball.
Right.
That's how she saved her.
Yeah.
And he says, you know what? I'm going to make one.
Yeah.
I'm going to
the boat. Yeah.
So he goes through this trial and error of trying to, like, make this boat, and they show him do it.
Yeah.
And he's like, God damn, he's a little man.
Yeah, he figured it out.
He didn't go to the Obasan's like, I need a weapon.
Yeah.
Can you help me?
There was literally a scene where he went to the old man who never... How to sharpen the blade.
Yeah, they established that tobacco is scarce. They all want some.
That's
the
right.
Old man's always getting some, and the old lady wants it.
Yeah.
And then when he goes to visit Natsuko when she's sick, he sees there's a pack of cigarettes there, and he grabs
them. Oh, shit, he did.
Yeah, he grabbed them when he left.
That's how he got those. Yeah.
So then he would just, like, bribe the old man to help him make the arrows.
Yeah, that's right, because he was smoking when he was helping.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
And crucially, the other Obasan.
Yes.
He's like, hey, kid, I got it.
Got some news for you.
Hey, I can give you a shortcut.
I can help you out.
It's already done. It's a done deal.
Yeah.
Just give me some tobacco.
Yeah. Make an offer to your elders, right?
He's like, no, I'm going to do it.
I got this.
Do it myself.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because that's, again, speaks to that kid's character. Like, he's so used to having to take care of his feelings, whatever's going on with himself, on his own, with a brave face.
He's very stubborn.
Very stubborn.
Because the logical thing would have been to just be like, oh, shit, okay, well,
yeah,
I'll just do this easier thing. But no, he's got to do it his way.
Yeah. That's also a very interesting message, too, because he's very well supported. I keep calling the little old ladies his ancestors, but I really think that's what they're supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
What is this, like, his dad's, like, grandmothers or aunties or something? Like, who's the blood tie there? Are they just random old ladies, or are they related?
So, for me, so, I mean, obviously his father is his father.
Right.
And then his new mother is his mom's sister.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Which is like fucking heavy.
Yeah. That's crazy.
His dad's a very efficient man.
He likes his, he has a type.
He had his type.
Yeah.
And he just stuck with it.
Okay. So it's her family then. Is it her?
So.
Because the guy was saying the bloodline has to be.
But those are not his ancestors.
Okay.
For me. Okay. I can weirdly relate to like a lot of. Like Chinese and Japanese media, like samurai movies, wuxia stuff. Because I grew up in a feudal Chinese household. I'm probably one of the last millennials to experience that. Right? Like I'm not going to go into my whole family history here, but essentially, I grew up in like a 19th century compound the first couple of years of my life before I moved to the U.S.
Okay,
and within that structure, you have the family, and then you have the help, but the help is still like your extended family, and typically the help is they are the relatives of the people that the family are close to. So like the people I grew up with, like my aunties that I grew up with, were long story short, like my grandfather was a general. He fought against the communists during the Chinese Civil War. His side lost, and rather than following everyone to Taiwan, he wanted more freedom. He went to Thailand instead. And so I grew up with a lot of my household was huge. There were like 50 people living there, and my granddad, he was the man. He was the big boss. And then a lot of the staff at the house were just relatives of his soldiers.
Okay.
People that followed him over. Like people that were loyal to him. And so I think the Obasans in this were kind of like that. They're just people, not blood relatives, but still part of that household.
I see. Yeah. So it's kind of how BI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that does make sense. So basically, though, serving that role as protectors.
Protectors.
Yeah. The older generation.
So looking after the very much the older generation looking after the new generation.
Got it.
And very crucially, even though they're not blood relatives, they look after you as if you were. And you care about them as if they were.
That seems to be another recurring thing here, too, because...
It's not just...
Yeah, because the stepmother is really, I'm your new mother, basically.
Yeah.
And eventually he does sort of accept her as that, right? Mm-hmm. That seems to be the lesson.
Yeah.
Interesting. I guess technically, though, he is related to her.
True.
This is blood.
Kind of, they share blood. But it's all about bonds, right?
Yeah.
It's all about extended family. Which, it goes beyond just blood. It's the people that are in your life that take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
My God, this movie is about everything.
It really is. It touches on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Let's see. So, I think where do we?
We've only covered the first 15 minutes.
It's interesting enough in a way that like this movie is so interesting that. We could almost just stay on the first act.
Yeah, I agree.
Not even tell you.
Yeah.
No, what else are we going to do that?
No total spoiler.
Okay. Let's do that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think we could literally stay within
the first act. Yeah, let's just stay in the first
act. And then just go see this shit.
Please see this shit.
Because it's... I say this as somebody who loves old anime and loves new anime also.
Mm.
But there are these rare moments where you see something, you experience something within this medium that feels very soulful, very human. I feel like Freiden does that, Ranking Kings does that, Makia does that, and this film, The Boy and the Heron, does it.
Inuo does it. You saw Inuo 2 weeks ago?
Inuo
or Inuo? I thought it was Inuo because it's a dog.
Oh, Inuo.
Inuo or Inuo?
How do you pronounce dog in Japanese?
Inuo.
It's Inuo, it's not Inu.
Okay. Inuo.
Inuo.
No, Inuo would be with an A.
Inuo. We're talking about the tribe.
That had a lot of heart and soul, too. That's pure guts,
So it's like, if there's any experience that gives you a human experience with animation within what we're talking about, this is another movie that you should add.
I
feel like we don't even need to really go past the first act.
Okay.
This
is our barely spoiler.
This is we're giving you the incentive to go find...
It's amazing.
An opportunity to go watch this in a theater. Because it's worth it.
Yeah, and if anyone is an animator that's listening to this, definitely watch it with those eyes and ears open. Because it has my mind whirling right now. I'm like, how did you animate normal shit?
Yes!
So beautiful. don't understand.
The mundane stuff.
It's like, outside of having someone like Hiroyuki Okiura do the work, there's another touch to this that's different. And it's like, I don't know how they did it. I just know I feel it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like I can't say, oh, they just did this, No. They're doing something over there.
Without being showy.
Without being showy. Yeah.
It was very humble, weirdly humble movie.
And I sit there perplexed. I was like, why does that look so awesome? Yeah. The entire time, right? Like, just the way a shoulder would move, the way cloth would move on the body.
Remember the guy who fixed the car?
Yeah.
And he just kind of effortlessly did it, but it was something about he communicated with his whole body, and it was just like, oh yeah, he fixed it.
Yeah, he fixed the car.
Yeah,
amazing.
I mean, even the guy that was the rickshaw, the bike,
the whole sequence, how the weight kept shifting
when they stepped into it.
Yes,
yeah,
three different ways it shifted.
What?
And all I could think of was man, this guy, that guy's got strong legs. He's gonna take this moment, this little boy in their heavy suitcase. I'm like, wow. Because it did three different ways.
Three different ways. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. There's so much that's communicated that feels real.
Yeah.
I just love it. So if this movie is Miyazaki, you know, looking at sort of his body of work, I think it's him paying respect to everyone in his life that fed his body of work.
Yeah.
And obviously it's about his parents, about his father, about his mother. But he also pays respect to, like, all these other people, like, all the incidental characters, all the unnamed characters. Mm. Like you said, like the rickshaw guy.
Yeah.
Like the guy that fixed the car, the Obasans, who they weren't all named. But it was like all of that feeds into your life. That makes you who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Wow. What a movie.
Go watch it.
At least.
Okay.
At least
is this it?
I think it's an hour.
Yeah.
Oh, so perfect. So perfect. Look at that.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, my God.
All right. All right. That's it.
That's it.
That's all we got to say.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
No outro.
Yeah.
Thank you.